Network Africa from the Voice of America. I am Junior Duofo in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 20th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. As the international community and the UN mark World Refugee Day, aid groups said they lack the funding to handle crisis in Sudan, Somalia, the Sahel, and other places.
Well, it's true that funding for humanitarian work has increased over the years. It's also true that the numbers of people in need of humanitarian assistance have grown significantly faster than the sector's ability to reach them.
A group of 6,000 Sudanese refugees are trapped by local militias in Ethiopia's Amhara region. Cyril Ramaphosa is inaugurated for a second term as South Africa's president. Officials in Chad probe explosions and fire at a military ammunition depot in the capital N'Djamena. Independent investigators accuse Sudan's warring parties of driving the country into a humanitarian abyss.
The investigators say the lack of concern for the suffering of millions of Sudanese civilians by the warring parties has led to killings, looting, mass displacement, rape, and other forms of sexual violence.
And U.S. President Joe Biden says his administration will offer protections to some undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Aid groups say crises in Sudan, Somalia, and the Sahel and other places are receiving a lot less funding than they need to handle the challenges they face. Earlier this month, the head of the Norwegian Refugee Council said, quote, "The utter neglect of the displaced people has become the new normal," unquote. Harry Wilkins reports on what refugees and non-profit groups think about current funding levels.
The UN says about 117 million people were forcibly displaced in 2023, making it the 12th straight year that the number has risen. This month, Jan Egeland, the head of the Norwegian Refugee Council, or NRC, said the utter neglect of displaced people has become the new normal. The NRC says Burkina Faso has more than 2 million displaced people, making it one of the most neglected displacement crises in the world. Fatimata Pisako, a mother of nine, fled northern Burkina Faso 5 years ago and says support has diminished since then.
"In the past, we were registered by the government, but we received no support from them. A few charitable organizations helped us, but their support has diminished significantly, and now they come only occasionally."
One senior humanitarian told VOA that the sheer number of global crises are sapping the political will to solve them.
"Well, it's true that funding for humanitarian work has increased over the years. It's also true that the numbers of people in need of humanitarian assistance have grown significantly faster than the sector's ability to reach them."
Situations like Pisako's are especially worrying, says Kieran Donnelly.
"So basically, these people are stuck. They're effectively warehoused, which is an awful term to use when talking about people. But that's one area in which we just don't see any real investment in finding solutions."
Will Carter is the Sudan Country Director for the Norwegian Refugee Council.
Never have I known such a miserly funding environment, which has led to sort of pretty, awful service coverage for people who are starving. And never have I seen such a level of diplomatic and, to an extent, media neglect over some horrendous crises.
Pisako says she understands the funding problems and prays for the conflict to end.
"The international community remains concerned about our situation. And while Burkina Faso's conflict continues, I understand it is not easy for them either. I pray for the conflict to end so that I can return to my village."
Like millions of other refugees, all she wants to do is return home. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
A group of 6,000 Sudanese refugees are trapped by local militias in the Alala Forest in the Amhara region of Ethiopia while en route to a United Nations Refugee Agency office. They are now facing starvation and dwindling medical supplies. VOA's Anthony Labrudo reports.
The group of Sudanese nationals had initially planned to reach Gondar, a city in Ethiopia's Amhara region, where a UNHCR office offered protection against the war in Sudan. But halfway there, the group says they were attacked by local militias.
"So the problem is those people, they got distributed on three big camps, three refugee camps. It's Olala camp and Komar camp and transit camp. When they stayed over there, they start like some people with guns. They don't know them. They don't know if they are following the militia or they just like local people. They start coming to the camps and looting those people, terrifying them.
Mohamed Abdo, who represents the refugees, says they have nowhere else to go. Recently, the refugee camp was informed by the militias that they would not be permitted to go any further into Ethiopia. The UNHCR office in Gondar is about 70 kilometers away from the camps. A refugee stranded in the Alala camp describes her experience.
I came from Khartoum to Ethiopia. We all came as immigrants, but we encountered one tragedy after another. We're dying every day, every second, and every minute. There's no health care and no treatment. It's most honorable for me to die in my country. Here, I suffered for a year without food or shelter.
The UN estimates that around 34,000 refugees live in Ethiopia due to dwindling food and a lack of medical supplies. UNHCR says it is actively working with the refugees to provide basic services. It's also encouraging the Sudanese refugees to stay within the Aulala and Kumer camps for greater protection while it continues to advocate for increased protection from Ethiopian authorities.
They have rain every day. They don't have like mattress, they don't have beds, they don't have even like roof. They can handle it, but it's still they are handling in a very bad situation because the forest is not a good situation. They have snakes, they have like scorpions. Even though they have a crocodile comes from nearby lake and try to attack them.
While the thousands of refugees wait for more aid, Abdo and other representatives of the refugees are starting donation campaigns. He ultimately hopes that by bringing attention to the refugees' situation, they will be able to safely relocate out of Ethiopia to either South Sudan or Egypt. Anthony Lerudo, VOA News, Washington.
Independent investigators accuse Sudan's warring parties of driving the country into a humanitarian abyss by blatantly disregarding fundamental human rights and international humanitarian law. Lisa Schlein in Geneva reports the three-member independent international fact-finding mission for Sudan has presented its oral update to the U.S. Human Rights Council.
The investigators say the lack of concern for the suffering of millions of Sudanese civilians by the warring parties has led to killings, looting, mass displacement, rape, and other forms of sexual violence. They say obstruction of delivery of aid to those in need by both Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces has plunged the country into a grave humanitarian crisis. They report 18 million people deprived of sufficient food are facing acute hunger, with 5 million on the brink of starvation. They note the conflict has led to the mass displacement of nearly 9 million people inside Sudan, as well as to more than 1.8 million refugees fleeing to neighboring countries. Since the outbreak of the conflict in mid-April 2023, other armed groups have sprung up in support of the two main military forces. Chair of the fact-finding mission, Mohamed Chande Otman, says multiple actors within and outside Sudan have caused the war to spread from the capital Khartoum and Darfur to most of the country.
We have received credible accounts of indiscriminate attacks against civilians and civilian objects, including through airstrikes and shelling in heavily populated residential areas, as well as ground attacks against civilians in their homes and villages. We are particularly concerned about the situation in Darfur, especially the siege of El Fasher.
El Fasher, the capital of Darfur with 1.5 million inhabitants, is the last stronghold of the Sudan army. Otman says fighting between the warring parties has led to many civilian casualties, damaged homes, and mass displacement. He says the mission has received credible reports of many cases of sexual violence committed by the warring parties across various parts of the country.
Women and girls have been and continue to be subjected to rape and gang rape, abduction, and forced marriage. There are reports of sexual slavery and sexualized torture in detention facilities, including against men and boys, which we are investigating. The majority of survivors have not had access to adequate support.
Following the presentation of the report, Yasser Bashir El-Bukhari Suleiman, chief prosecutor of Sudan, spoke as the representative of the concerned country. He accused the RSF of multiple crimes and atrocities against unarmed civilians without assigning any blame to the Sudanese armed forces for the commission of similar acts. Commenting on the situation in Sudan last month, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres accused the warring factions of committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 20th, and for more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Cyril Ramaphosa was inaugurated Wednesday for his second term as South Africa's president, but as Kate Bartlett reports, Ramaphosa could face a tough road ahead in keeping his new coalition government together.
A poet singing President Cyril Ramaphosa's praises after he took the oath of office at a colorful ceremony in Pretoria, attended by African royalty, heads of state, and diplomats. Ramaphosa won a vote in Parliament last week to lead the country for a second term. But the second term begins under starkly different circumstances than the first. Ramaphosa's African National Congress Party lost its parliamentary majority in the May elections for the first time since the end of apartheid 30 years ago. The ANC then engaged in talks with political opponents to form a coalition government that it is calling a government of national unity. Ramaphosa referenced that in his inaugural speech. The ANC struck a deal with the main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, or DA, which got the second largest number of votes at the polls. Several other smaller parties, the mainly Zulu Inkatha Freedom Party, the Good Party, and the Populist Patriotic Alliance, have also joined the government. The agreement with the centrist DA was a relief to the markets and resulted in gains for South Africa's currency, the rand. Lumkili Mondi, a lecturer in economics at Johannesburg's Witwatersrand University, explains the unity government is seen as a very positive step.
The agreement with the centrist DA has been a relief to the markets and has seen the South African currency, the rand, gaining some momentum.
There had been concerns in some quarters the ANC could go into government with the radical left-wing economic freedom fighters, which wants the nationalization of land, banks, and mines. But the EFF has refused to join a unity government that includes the DA, which has a white leader, John Steenhuisen. The Mkhonto we Sizwe Party, or MK, which got the third largest share of the vote and is led by former President Jacob Zuma, has also refused to join a unity government. MK has alleged, without any evidence, that there were election irregularities and refused to work with Ramaphosa, raising the specter of violence. However, what is notable is how peaceful things have been so far, with the ANC accepting the loss of its majority graciously and forming a coalition, said analyst Melanie Vervoet.
Unlike so many other countries in the developing world, when the Liberation Party or Liberation Movement turned government and then after a couple of decades lose their overall majority and then won't accept that, South Africa has gone through a totally peaceful.
All eyes are now on whether the unity government deal between such ideologically diverse parties can hold. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thank you, Kate. And Chad's President Mohamed Idris Deby on Wednesday visited the site of a deadly ammunition depot explosion in the capital in N'Djamena. Different news agency AFP reports he said that the injured will receive state care as he called for future military storage sites to be located outside cities. Health authorities said the blast on Tuesday night was triggered by a fire at the depot near N'Djamena Airport, killing at least 9 people and wounding over 46 others. Walking through the debris-strewn area, Deby said the situation was under control, but lessons must be learned. Dozens of Russian military instructors have arrived in insurgency-hit Burkina Faso following a jihadist attack in the restive north, about which the authorities have remained silent, sources told the French news agency on Tuesday. After taking power in September 2022, the West African country's coup leaders expelled troops and diplomats from former colonial ruler France and have turned to Russia for military assistance. An independent source also confirmed the arrival of the instructors, a term used for former fighters from Russia's Wagner mercenary group, now regrouped under a new body called the Africa Corps. U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday said his administration would offer protections to some undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens. He also marked the 12th anniversary of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which provides protection for young undocumented immigrants to the U.S. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
For Javier Quiroz Castro, setting foot inside America's most famous home was an impossible dream. His parents brought him to the U.S. at age 3 without legal immigration status. But on Tuesday, he was at the White House, a world away from the Houston hospital where he works as a nurse. He was here, he said, because he took advantage of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program known as DACA.
Saving American lives was only possible because of DACA. It allowed me to live and work and build a family in the only country I have ever known and loved.
On Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden announced a new measure to offer protections to undocumented spouses of American citizens, a move the White House says affects more than 500,000 people.
These couples have been raising families, sending their kids to church and school, paying taxes, contributing to our country for 10 years or more, but living in the United States all this time with fear and uncertainty. We can fix that, and that's what I'm going to do today.
But immigration is a sensitive topic this election year, and over the past 20 years, crossings have been high at the U.S. southern border. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has accused Biden of what he calls a migrant invasion. Trump blames immigrants for a number of ills, including crime, inflation, and even disease and terrorism, but often without clear evidence and sometimes in the face of facts.
An estimated 50% of inflation has been caused by the soaring cost of housing, which is skyrocketing due to Joe Biden's tidal wave of illegal immigration and high interest rates.
Immigration advocates disagree, saying research shows that those who benefit from this policy contribute about $13 billion in spending power to the U.S. economy each year. Philip Connor is a senior demographer at the bipartisan immigration advocacy group Forward U.S.
We estimate that if they were to be U.S. citizens years down the line, they could actually increase that amount by about $5 billion each year. With some kind of legal status that will be permitted through this policy, that will allow them to go into careers that are borrowed from them right now and to be more productive into our economy, which will be beneficial for their families, but also beneficial for our society as a whole.
Rebecca Shee, executive director of the American Business Immigration Coalition, says her mother had been undocumented for nearly 2 decades.
She was a doctor in China, but for 19 years, undocumented here. She worked in Chinese restaurants. She worked in nursing homes, caring for elderly and emptying bedpans, and you know, wasn't able to practice her profession. And so when she was able to get parole in place and a green card, she went back to the medical field, and it's been thrilling and deeply humanizing for her. And just showing that when you legalize people who are here for decades, already contributing, you unleash their economic potential. And that's good for every American.
And for Americans like Javier Quiroz Castro, it's something more. A warm embrace from the country he calls home. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Janet Otieno is an award-winning gospel recording artist from Kenya on a U.S.-Canada tour. She stopped by our VOA studio, Washington, D.C. recently and talked with my colleague David Vandy about her show and what she does when she's not singing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey.
Every year I do a tour of this America, both United States and Canada, and this time I was doing it in Canada. I've gone to several states, having concerts here and there, and also ministering in church. So I've done a lot of ministration in churches. And yes, and one of the places that I visited that I really loved because I wanted to see my people is actually here, because I haven't seen them for 10 years. And so being here has just made me so happy. I feel a lot of joy.
So what is life like for Janet out there back home?
It has been amazing. And so I would say life has been good, and just as ministry has its own challenges, like just like any other any other work that all of us are doing out here. It has challenges, but with God, it can truly be amazing. I've seen God do wonderful things to me, and I have a testimony, a lot of it, actually.
And so, out of music, what are you engaging with?
I love giving back to the community, to the society. I love supporting the less fortunate. I love supporting, widows and the orphans. Just I don't do it the way people do it. Like, you know, I have my own orphanage. I identify different orphanages to partner with. That way, I'm able to support a lot of children than just having to support the ones that I have. You know what I mean? So I go to different places supporting the children, giving back, and more so I visit the prisons, women prisons. And I do it like every year during Valentine's. I visit the women so much, give them flowers, go do pedicure for them so that they can feel beautiful, because a woman loves when they are beautiful, have their hair done and do the health, you know, like taking them to medical assessment to make sure that they're okay, taking sanitary towels to them and, you know, lotions and such things. We do it, and I take the bouncing castles to the children, because they're children that are born in prisons, and so that they can also feel this different kind of life that other children are feeling out there. So that's what I do annually, but I do visit them like quarterly.
That was Kenyan gospel recording artist Janet Otieno speaking with my colleague David Vandy in Washington. California researchers are working to make self-driving cars safer by letting them see around corners. Madibo has our story in this week's episode of Log On.
Seeing past walls and obstacles was once an ability reserved for superheroes. Now a research team at Stanford University is using laser light pulses to image objects that are out of sight of a camera. It works by bouncing light off surrounding surfaces, such as a wall.
There's a light source, there's a laser, it emits a short pulse that travels into the scene. It hits a visible part of the wall here. It gets scattered behind the wall, so the sensor cannot see the object directly. But some of these photons hit the hidden object, and some of these photons scatter back all the way back to the camera.
Vetstein says by measuring the length of time the photons take to return to the camera, the system can determine the shape of the hidden object. The technology might first be used to enhance the LiDAR imaging systems of autonomous vehicles, to let them see more of their environment.
It can see farther ahead. It can make better and more robust decisions. We don't want the car just to see what we as humans see. We want them to be way more safe.
Search and rescue operations are another potential use.
Think about an earthquake. You know, people are buried under rubble. If there's any kind of opening and we could just shoot a laser in there, we could quickly scan the 3D environment of the hidden part of the scene and see if there are any people in there that need help.
The biggest challenge facing the team was filtering through all the photons arriving at the camera to reconstruct an object's image. The breakthrough came with this algorithm, but putting the system to practical use will depend on technical advances yet to happen.
There's still a few challenges ahead, but I think what we've been able to do is demonstrate the feasibility of this idea.
The future may be just around the corner. Matt Dibble, VOA News, Stanford, California.
And that's it for this Thursday, June 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Chinedu Afua in Washington, wishing you a great day.